We are back. We are back. It's Vegas. It's the Mandalay Bay. It's Mix. Channel 9 live, live, live. Who's here? Who do you ask? Who is the big get? Who's the big get for the talk show host at Channel 9? Yes, Stack Overflow. How's it going, guys?
Excellent. All right.
Fantastic. Got the Stack Exchange t-shirt.
Yep.
Very cool.
It's a new company name.
Yeah. We've got Sam Saffron, Ben Dumke, and Kevin Montrose. Would you tell us what you guys do at Stack Overflow and how it works? Sam, what do you do?
We work at the core team. So we make sure the site keeps on running, build new features for the site. We all have different focus areas.
Okay.
I like dealing with a lot of performance issues and all sorts of new features.
So when you say performance issue, are you like the guy who's like in the profiler and you're like, this took 6 more milliseconds than it should have taken? What are we going to do?
Usually, yeah.
That? Is that you?
So, yeah, I wrote a few tools to analyze performance issues that we have. So you said that, and we actually have a front end that the admins see that shows all the expensive queries that ran over the last, ever since we restarted the SQL Server. Mm-hmm. So SQL Server has these counters. It keeps on counting how long each query takes, and it sits in the procedure cache, and we query that, and we have a leaderboard.
You have a performance leaderboard.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Ben, what do you do?
Well, we all pretty much work on everything, but my main area is much of the JavaScript. Mm-hmm. That's where I feel good. And the whole chat. That was pretty much my and Mark Revel's project, the chat system, yeah.
Very cool. Kevin?
Yeah, I guess distinct from these guys, I work on the API.
Well, how many people are there at Stack Exchange?
Oh, jeez.
Well, the actual core team is like...
Seven, eight?
Yeah.
Okay.
Eight.
Like pointing,
eight.
There's a guy holding up his fingers out here going, eight. Who have we forgotten? Who feels bad about that guy? Who's that guy?
That's probably Jeff.
That's probably Jeff. Jeff Atwood. That's the one we always forget. Yeah, he's that eighth member.
And then there's that's the core team, the distributed team. And then there's a whole lot of guys in New York. They work on careers and stuff like that. And there's the sales team and administrative stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we're close to 30 people in total now.
So for people who may not be familiar, of course, Stack Overflow is a programming Q&A site, but Stack Exchange is the kind of larger holding company because you've got like cooking.stackexchange and writing.whatever.
Yeah.
So it went from just being programmer Q&A to now it's like gaming all kinds of Q&A. If there's a question, I want to make it.
It's not just if there's a question. We're trying to stay in verticals. So we want to have communities of experts, not just ask anything.
So you don't want to be just like answers.yahoo,
no.
It's like ask anything?
No, definitely not.
What are some of the most popular verticals right now?
Well, Stack Overflow always.
Of course. I know I've seen cooking a lot.
Cooking comes up. Photography is really good. Gaming is doing well. Trying to think.
Are those all running on the same server?
All the same. It's all the same platform. So the core team builds a platform for all the various Stack Exchanges, and we deploy together. So like all of the existing sites and the databases get updated at the same time, and they go online. I guess.
What kind of traffic are we talking about? Like millions of views a month. You guys know the latest numbers?
15, I think. Is that right?
We're talking millions, right?
Stack Overflow, it peaks at like 3 million page views a day.
3 million page views a day?
Yeah.
And Stack Overflow is like
still climbing.
The huge mothership.
Right.
And everything else vanishes almost. Actually, Stack Exchange is growing, but
yeah, it is growing.
But Stack Overflow is
and how many servers? I mean, how many IIS servers are there doing?
There are 10.
Yeah.
Well,
ten.
That's counting our
10?
Dev and staging. So
counting
nine.
Dev and staging. Well, how many like in production?
9.
So this is significant. I think that this is an interesting thing to point out because there's all the different discussion about, you know, what programming language is most fun, and you know, is Ruby the greatest, or is Git the greatest, or is Apache this and that. But I mean, I think that one of the reasons that I work at Microsoft is because I used to work in online banking, and we did big banks, big Northwest banks with names I can't tell you because I would be sued. But like, you know, 25% of the U.S. retail banking ran on a product that we did in .NET on IIS. And honestly, we did not have major problems in scaling. It was not rocket science. It was more fun to squeeze out that last few milliseconds, but there were no major kind of crises. So I think it's important to point out that you're talking about millions of page views a day on less than 10 IIS servers?
Yeah, and like we could run it, we did the numbers the other day, we could run it probably on 2 at the moment.
You could run it on 2?
Yeah.
Are these like God's own computer? Or, I mean
they're
off the
beefy.
Shelf.
They're
buy
beefy.
Them a Dell or what?
They're like dual CPU, quad cores, I think, or dual cores. So they're beefy enough, but they're not. You're not talking about God's own computer. That's our database server.
Okay, so that's an interesting thing. So the real money is spent on the database.
The database server has 100 gigs of RAM. It has it's 16-way. But
really, so the web servers are not significant. They're not particularly interesting in their configuration.
Yeah.
Fairly standard. Well, how many gigs of RAM on a web server?
16. What was that? Or more?
16 sounds right.
Yeah, 16. I think.
Not an obscene amount.
No.
You said 100 gigs on the SQL Server.
Yeah.
Yeah, something around there.
The goal was to have all of our databases in memory at all times. So, yeah, it goes to 100 gigs.
And what happens at some point when, you know, every question on the planet has been answered and it's all in your database? You still going to hold that in memory?
Well.
Do you have those discussions?
Memory is getting cheaper all the time.
But do you have those discussions? I understand Facebook pretty much keeps everything in memory, right? I mean, there's only 6 billion people.
Jeff is very adamant about like keeping our database size manageable.
Yeah.
So he's like, you want to add a new table, make sure you remove a table first. But we're pragmatic. I mean, if it grows over what we can hold in memory, we will do that. I mean, it's not everybody's looking at every question in the world, and as there are more questions, I guess we will be able to have some that are not in RAM.
Mm-hmm. If you've got questions for Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange, send it to #CH9Live. We'll put it up in the big Twitter board. I know that if the power of coding horror gets behind it, we'll have lots of retweets.
Yeah.
and people will come talk to us. So you work on Perf, and I've seen some of your blog posts on Perf, and we've talked about that. And you said you work on the API, Kevin?
Yeah.
And who is using that API, and what are they using it for?
Oh, I mean, we're our biggest consumers right now.
So you use your own API?
Yeah, like a lot of careers consumes the API, just get data. So like a significant portion of everything that doesn't contact the user can just be done with our own data publicly. There are some neat like iPhone apps and like Stack Printer. Something we don't do very well is like printing questions. It's just, you know, style sheets are unpleasant for print. And someone just came through and built just a nice little app for printing questions.
So your apps, when you say, you know, print preview, your CSS doesn't look nice for printing.
Yeah,
so they wrote
it. There's all that, like, the paging problems and all that stuff. And yeah, so they just wrote something that, you know, throws up a PDF using the public API to get all the data.
A lot of people said that the initial success of Twitter was the fact that they had so many clients, and like the initial explosive growth of Twitter was these clients. And then Twitter started blessing clients and buying clients, and now they're like the official Twitter clients. And now they're starting to push back and say, well, maybe it's really about the web or clients that we make. But I haven't seen a lot of push from Stack Overflow to say that there should be like some rich desktop experience.
No.
Instead, you guys spend more time in JavaScript, right, doing things in the web that I wouldn't have expected you could do, like the chat. I mean, when you think about that, like, does the chat use the API and you guys talk to each other?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the one thing is about the chat, it's supplemental to the main site. So you're supposed to be like talking about questions that happen on the site. So if you put a link to a question on one of the sites, you get a preview of that that uses the API, the whole user authentication stuff and so on. Obviously, part of that is private API, but also use lots of the public API to get like users' reputation and display names carried over to chat. So the whole global inbox thing, because we have like, what's it now, 40 sites or so?
Yeah.
So you've got like one inbox that you have everywhere. If you get a new comment on some site, get a new answer on some other site, and have a chat message waiting for you, and so all that is...
But also in one place. So I'm Scott Hanselman on cooking and on Stack Overflow. It's the same all the way across.
Right.
It's so the same.
I mean, it was okay when we had like 3 or 4 sites.
Is that the goal, the ultimate goal, is to have one?
No, we don't want to have one site. That's not...
Not
the goal,
one site,
is
but
have...
one peep. I'm only me, right? There's only one me. I should be the same me everywhere.
And that's what the goal of the inbox is, to like give you activity from all of the sites. And we have Stack Exchange profiles as well, which is like this one central profile of all of your best questions across the network, so you can just see
all of your activity, your inbox going back forever.
And that makes sense why you would have this notion of careers. They've got careers for Stack Overflow, which is like, well, my profile might eventually become my homepage. It might as well be my resume, right?
Yeah.
You know, here's some really smart stuff that I said, sorted by relevance.
Yeah.
It's pretty much handled for us.
So, yeah, in careers, you can actually handpick questions that to, like, this is a showcase of, like, my best answers or best questions that I had. You can showcase your Git work, et cetera. So.
Here's a really great question from Twitter here from Jason Punyon, who says, how do you tell who's to blame when things go wrong?
Because
he's a small
team. Just him.
Yeah, it's always
it's always Jason.
But I'm such a small, intimate team, though. I mean, doesn't that... I mean, for me, it would be really... I mean, when you work in a startup, and I've done a couple, somebody's the worst of the eight, and it's usually each week it's different because everyone has a better, you know, good week or a bad week.
Well, I think what Jason wants to plug is our wheel of blame.
You have a wheel of blame.
We have a wheel of blame. So we also use our chat like for internal communication, private rooms, obviously. And there's a little Easter egg activated there. Somebody says, not my fault. Then the wheel of blame starts spinning with a little Wheel of Fortune music in the background, and like picks who is to blame.
Yeah, Ben wrote that. So.
And is that something that's public, or is that only private?
No, that's just for us.
How do you guys keep all the fun stuff to yourself?
It was public for like a couple of days, I think, on Meta.
But we had fun stuff. Ben, during April Fool's, Ben had like a special animation that came whenever you voted. There'd be unicorns running and doing all sorts of cool things. I wish you could still see it. It's a shame.
Is everyone a peer? And is it like is there code ownership at like everyone cares equally about the code? Because one of the things I thought was interesting is that when I asked you to introduce yourself, you said, "Well, you know, I code and I help maintain the servers." And a lot of times at larger companies, it's like, "Well, you know, I code, and there's some other dude that does the servers, and then this lady makes sure the database is up." You know what I'm saying?
There's
partition responsibility, and I don't see that at Stack Exchange.
No.
We were just too small for so long. Like, you had to be able to do everything.
We also like to find out, you know, what the root cause is of a problem. And to do that, you have to go across different disciplines. So sometimes you have to act as a DBA for a bit to figure it out, and then as a sysadmin a bit to figure it out. So you're wearing all these multiple hats and juggling them all the time.
And sometimes it's just you want to fix a bug and you're the only one awake because you're the only one who lives in Germany and the rest of the world is asleep.
So you're all remote.
Yeah. It's interesting. You're talking at three different time zones, like radically different time zones.
So where are you each located?
So I'm Australia.
Germany.
I'm in New York.
Wow. And Atwood is in
California.
He's in California. Mark is in Britain.
And it works.
It works really well.
Pretty well.
One of the things that I gave Jeff a hassle about a couple of years ago on my podcast is I told him that he tells me he likes to remote desktop into production on a regular basis. So I just read in the Riot Act that was like this, you know, I was dumber for having heard that. So then he declared that remote desktoping into production is called Hanselmaning into production. Do you guys still Hanselman into production?
Well, you have to be VPN'd in to be able to.
So you VPN
that.
In and then you Hanselman. So I've achieved something and then you no longer can just RDP directly into Stack Overflow.
You no longer Hanselman into anything past the web tier.
No, that's we have like now an RDP server as well that we actually go. So we VPN in, and then there's a dedicated server for us having remote desktop, and we'll open up sessions to SQL Server and try and do everything as remotely as possible.
I see.
And eventually, sometimes you have to go onto the local machine, but usually you can get away without doing that.
And how do you deploy? How do you deploy your stuff? And how do you do change management? Like if you've got 9 IIS machines. What happens if a DLL is the wrong version on machine 5 and it causes a flaky?
We use cruise control, just picks up the changes from the Mercurial repository, and we just click a button and it runs any new database migrations, compiles, and
how do you do migrations?
Just deploys.
It's Sam's bag.
So yeah, I wrote a system that we have a series of SQL files that we execute one at a time, so it's forward-only migrations. There's no rollback,
No pressure with a forward-only migration.
Yeah, the rollbacks are a big problem because it gets complicated, especially if you start touching data.
Mm-hmm. So you have a bunch of these, like 1.SQL, 2.SQL, and they go forward. But what happens when there's like 800 of those? You collapse them.
We collapse them every 100.
Really?
So we're up to 200 at the moment. We're just about to need to collapse again.
About to collapse again?
Yeah.
Interesting. And cruise control deploys for you? You've got deployment packages that send it up there?
Yeah. And it runs migrations as well.
How often does Stack Overflow rev?
Three times a day.
So you're telling me that literally when I hit www.stackoverflow.com...
You're probably running against new code.
Yeah.
I'm running right, nice, fresh-smelling code.
Yeah, basically.
And how do I not see it get updated? I mean, do you go down for 10 minutes every 3 hours?
No.
How are you updating me? 10 seconds or so?
Yeah, like our initial build of Meta takes a while because we generate all the styles for different sites. And then it takes
why are these styles and stuff?
So how does it say?
We have a proxy in the front that will actually hold traffic a bit if stuff is changing.
Oh, okay. So it might just feel a little sluggish for a minute.
Yeah.
And you might actually catch a page that says down for maintenance. We'll be right back. But
not a big deal.
Just takes like 5 or 10 seconds max.
What you say it's saying 5 or 10 seconds to start up. How does a site like Stack Overflow start up in 5 or 10 seconds when other people say that their sites take a minute or so? Right. I mean, and also this priming the cache, right? You have to go and refresh this giant cache.
Our cache is persisted.
Your cache is persisted, so it's warm when it starts up.
It's warm when it starts up.
Yeah.
There are bits that are cold, but not like...
It's not like hitting the database to... might get the cash back or anything.
I hope you guys start thinking of ways to get this information out to the community as a prescription, because if you've solved some problems...
Our caching layer is open source now.
Yeah.
Redis book sleeve.
Well, yeah, actually, if you go to highscalability.com, their blog talks all about how you guys did that, didn't they?
Yeah, Mark opened that up yesterday, 2 days ago. It's very recent.
We got some good questions coming in at #CH9Live. So Lynn wants to know, how is your infrastructure more efficient than Dig? There's that quote that goes around that Dig's running on like hundreds of servers, 500 servers, and you're running on 9.
No, efficient. I think it's about the amount of effort you're willing to put into it, and we work a lot on performance.
You don't need to, right? I mean, you could run it on 20 servers and be sloppier, couldn't you?
The thing is, if you have a page that is slow on... one web server, it'll still be slow on 50 web servers. You've just distributed the slow. So the key for us is making the load time for the page as short as possible. Mm-hmm. And in that process, you make the code incredibly more efficient, and then you can run more of it.
So actually, it's just a side effect of us wanting to respond
fast.
Really fast.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing profile your code. And what I'm hearing, the under meta thing here is that a lot of people just don't measure.
Yeah.
Right? They write their stuff, they deploy their stuff, and they don't spend any time.
Yeah, I mean,
you have a freaking dashboard of expensive queries.
Yeah.
So here's the big question. The 8 or 9 of you guys, is this technology that's allowing you to scale or personality? Have you guys just hired like the 9 most uptight and in detail-oriented programmers, a la Jeff Atwood's personality, and caused this to happen by virtue of your strength and will of personality? Are you obviously, like, when I asked you, you could run it on 20, you visibly stiffened up.
Yeah.
Like, well, I could do that, but, you know, you couldn't do it, right?
It's frustrating.
You wouldn't allow yourself
to do
that.
It's frustrating because, say, you've got these pages that are taking a second to load, and suddenly there's too much load, and now you can't handle it anymore, so they're taking 3 seconds. So you're going to distribute that 1 second across 20 servers. Mm-hmm. You've still got a page that takes a second to load.
But you're obviously obsessive about this.
Yeah.
Should we all be that obsessive? Or should we just find one of you to hire?
The basic thing is longer this page takes to load, it just keeps people
it's
away.
It's the multiplicative effect,
There are more people come to your site if your site is fast.
Yeah, performance is a feature. That's something that Jeff has driven into every member of the team, and we all strongly believe in it. And there's no way that anybody could work in the core team without believing in that like mantra that you have to have.
Is that message something that's like fundamental that Microsoft and people like myself that talk to people all day need to kind of start pounding on that drum and here's how to measure, like teaching people how to measure as opposed to just how to cut.
Well, I guess the first step is just be aware of it.
Yeah.
Be aware that you can always be faster than you already are. I'm not sure if that depends on the stack. I mean,
no, at least know what's going on. Like a lot of people are blind. You know, they just push the code out there and hope that it'll work. But at least have some system that tells you how well stuff is going. And that is like I think, a basic thing that a lot of people miss.
Mm-hmm. I just look at how long does a page load take, and if it takes 2 seconds, you can be pretty sure that there's stuff you can do to improve that.
Like, we know when there are problems. If we go and use Stack Overflow and it's slow, that's very frustrating for us. Like, just using our own site, we have to, like,
There's the dog fooding part. Like, we're constantly using our site, so, like, we want to make sure that they feel right.
So you're asking questions in Stack Overflow in order to develop Stack Overflow?
Stack Overflow is bootstrapping Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
And you just, is it sub-second all the way across, or are you trying to do half second for page loads? What's your goal? What's your, like, unspoken goal?
At the moment, Question Show was averaging 40 milliseconds over 2,000 runs.
You said Question Show.
Yeah.
So you actually a question page.
So we're not talking about 1,000 milliseconds. Like, I just said a second. You're saying you want this done in...
I was uncomfortable at 200. Now at 40, I'm kind of okay.
You were uncomfortable when your pages load in a fifth of a second.
Yeah.
Well, that's ignoring actually getting the page out to the user. That's just our render
The response time from okay, so I've got a bit of latency because I'm sitting in Berlin. But I usually get a page... Like, from the moment my browser makes the request to the moment I can start reading.
Perception of speed is different. He's talking about milliseconds from byte in, byte out.
Right.
And you're thinking about it.
And that's from the moment the request is made to the time I can actually read the pages, around 800 milliseconds.
Yeah, you can't fix it. The speed of light is the speed of light. Nothing's going faster.
Are you working on that to fix that, Sam?
Not yet.
You watch. He's going to have a dashboard that's going to measure the speed of light and why he can't change it. Bjorn has a question here about, what about using Azure or cloud for scalability? I mean, have you any thought about elasticity as a possible solution?
We're control freaks, I guess, is
what it boils down to. The way we're doing it just works. So why change it?
So you're not having any problem scaling 3-4 million views a day on 9 servers. So when there's a problem, then you'll think about it then.
Yeah,
interesting.
And we have 2 dedicated sysadmins, which is important as well. That really helps us with this.
Oh, really? And they're they're there to keep the box running, people.
They're there to make sure backups are running, keep the boxes running, make sure that stuff is running properly.
Mm-hmm. Find ways to get our internal network faster.
Yeah,
kind of
that
stuff
was
really
interesting.
Helps.
Two good questions here. First one is Jeffrey Dalton wants to know, are you still using SQL Server, right? Sounds like that 100 gig SQL Server, that's still SQL Server. And you're using Link to SQL, and now you're even going closer to the metal and doing inline SQL with your own, not quite ORM.
Yes.
what do you call that? What is the name of the tool?
I called it a micro ORM. It's called Dapper, but I called it a micro ORM. It's not really an ORM. It's just it's a faster way of... having inline SQL and not having to deal with a lot of the mess of SQL data readers.
So the issue isn't the SQL on the way in, it's the getting the object on the way back out. So you go, like today I typed in select star from episodes and I got back a dynamic.
Yeah.
You have that, basically.
So, but we bring back a POCO object.
So you go and one time emit out what a deserializer would look like for this data reader, and
correct.
I say select star from episodes, and I get a real one, an actual POCO, not a dynamic, but a real one.
Yeah.
So it's in the it's like Dapper and Massive. It's all kind of that. So you've gone. So they got Entity Framework, Link to SQL, Dapper and Massive. So you're very low level on the metal when it comes to your data access. It sounds like. And then a great question from John Castor. What profiling tools are you using? Are you using your own? Are you using tools from different vendors that people should check out?
It's a mixture of tools. We use SQL Server Profiler a lot. We use our own built-in tools. So I have one that helps you find runaway CPU. So if your CPUs are all spiking at 100%, you don't know what's going on. It attaches a debugger, grabs stack traces, and aggregates all that to figure out where stuff is slow. Mm-hmm. On our dev boxes, we'll use JetBrains Profiler. Mm-hmm. I've used the Link Profiler by Allende as well, the Rhino Profiler, which is good. And is there any other?
How much time do you spend?
Sometimes it's just, you put a stopwatch at the
top
of the
function,
and you stop it at the end if you just want to check something.
Do you guys spend a good portion of your day? Like, I mean, can you give me an idea of what a day looks like as far as like percentages, like tests, measuring versus actual writing the code that works?
Writing the code is the hugest
part.
Writing the code is the hugest part.
It comes and goes because you'll like be working on some new feature and then that's what you're working on. And then you'll deploy it and now it's like, all right, this needs to be faster. And now you're spending all your time measuring. and then you're writing code
so
again.
Get it done and then make it fast.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like it needs to survive when you first deploy it, but then it needs to keep getting faster for a while.
Mm-hmm. And do you guys run agile methods like Scrum? Do you have a Kanban board, or how do you keep track of your backlog, and how does that go through the process?
Yeah, we've got team chat that's on constantly, and we're constantly talking. Like we're in a one long Scrum meeting.
So even though you're remote, you're really all sitting in the same cubicle farm all day long.
Then we have two calls a week. 1 hour each, that we just cover what everybody is doing and what are we going to continue working on. Mm-hmm. We then go a bit further, and then the team will send an update once a week of what's going on with the team, and then we can tell what the company's doing. So a lot of this communication is like key to success, because if we'd be in a silo and not know what others are doing, it would be really hard.
Would you say that it is more about constant and pervasive and persistent communication than it is about methodology, about actual software development?
Yes.
Do you have a methodology, or are you just a bunch of smart guys in a chat program?
I don't think we have a methodology.
I would call it a methodology.
And when you,
it's just pretty much just do stuff, get it out there. If it breaks, fix it.
So you said that you're releasing this. Cruise Control's got you get your daily build. You check in your code. I assume you're using like Mercurial or something like that.
Yeah.
You check your code into Mercurial. I assume when you check it in, it's ready to be to production? Like, is that blessed?
Yeah. There's a dev build that gets made automatically. Then we actually have three build tiers. Four, counting the dev server. And the first thing we always build is Meta Stack Overflow. It's kind of like...
Because it's the site that matters the least if it breaks.
Yes. Yeah.
And get the best feedback. Like
because people who are active on Meta are like the hardcore users who love the site and use it all the time, and they're just the ones who write the best bug reports. So all the other sites, the Stack Exchange 2.0 sites, have their own button, like it's building others, as we say, and then it's building Stack Overflow, because Stack Overflow is so huge, it has its own button.
Right. And you'll find initial, like, just silly bugs when you build Meta, and it's finally under some traffic, and then you'll find, like, hopefully, algorithmic bugs, does not work at scale in others, and then you'll build Stack Overflow, and you'll find all the actual bugs.
So, okay, last question, because we've only got a few minutes left. What's the most epic bug checked in the last month or so? Like, one was just like, oh, burn, like that kind of bug. Like, oh, dude.
Was there any?
I remember one from February.
Give it to me, Kevin.
We broke output caching.
Yeah.
You wrote output caching.
Like, completely.
So you're no longer cached.
We have so many layers of cache.
Yeah, we were no longer whole cloth caching for anonymous users. Time span, the default constructor, single number, ticks, not seconds. It's very important.
So you passed in a time span, and you thought it was seconds,
but it was ticks. Span and things were expiring.
So you were holding it for ticks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
for like no 60 caching. Ticks.
Who do we have to thank for that?
It would be Sam.
Yes! The man who measures, though. But you found it because you measured.
Yeah. We fixed it, and it didn't make a big difference as well. So that was the biggest surprise.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sam, Ben, and Kevin from Stack Exchange. We really appreciate you guys hanging out at Mix.
Cheers.
And you got the whole team here, right? So if folks see someone with a Stack Exchange t-shirt walking around here at Mix, say hi and thank them for all their hard work.
We are
Channel 9.
Stickers.
We are passing out stickers. They're giving stickers if you find a person with a Stack Exchange t-shirt. It's Channel 9 Live in Las Vegas. We'll be back.